From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of July, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. We'll check yesterday's weekly crop progress report and the numbers from across the Midwest. And we'll use the CropProtectionNetwork.org to explore fungal diseases you should be scouting for in your fields this week. We'll also take a look at the agricultural energies with Dave Chatterton at Strategic Farm Marketing and hear from Don Day too at Day Weather on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today settled $4.52 3/4, 3 1/4 higher. December at $4.74 3/4, up 1 3/4. And March futures for the corn at $4.91, 2 1/2 higher. August soybeans down 6 1/2. September 5 lower. November at $12.22 3/4, 3 1/2 cents lower. December soft red winter wheat at $6.97, down 4 1/2. The hard red December at $7.51, finished 10 1/2 cents lower. Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com. Hello, Naomi. Thanks for being with us again today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Let's talk about the marketplace. Interesting one. For the last couple of weeks, the rally in wheat and soybeans both. How do you view those?
So I feel like the rallies that we have had so far, mostly justified from the standpoint that with the drought in Europe, that brought down global crop for corn and wheat. I think it helped to justify a rally to where we are right now. The overly bearish sentiment that our U.S. markets have had for a good year, I think has maybe shifted to neutral because global carryout levels are starting to edge lower. But the predicament now is, where is this U.S. crop going to end up? The crop progress ratings from yesterday has U.S. corn at 67% good to excellent, down just a point from last week, but traders thought it would be lower than that with the heat. And the soybeans came in at 66% good to excellent. That was actually up a point from last week, and traders, again, due to the heat, thought it would be lower. So grain markets today, still overall kind of just trading near some recent resistance levels for the corn and the wheat. Soybeans had pushed higher yesterday on the drier forecast and had turnaround Tuesday today. And it feels like the market might just want to sit here and wait just a bit to see what further rainfall may materialize this week. Iowa had good rain last night. It went into western Illinois. Indiana looked like it was a little hit or miss, and Ohio had decent rains today. But we're waiting to see with this cooler temperature what is going to happen for Nebraska. They do have forecasts for rain the next 2 days, about a 50% chance in that main corn growing part of Nebraska. So we'll be watching for that. But it's interesting, some of the private satellite image companies are poking their head out there. They're thinking that they might see some good yields. One company had it at 185 for corn yield. A different company had yield near 188, but with a quick disclaimer of that can change just depending on if these rains occur or not.
I take it you drove to Des Moines last week. Is that correct? Was that for market to market first? And then what did the crop look like?
So I did drive to Des Moines last week, Thursday afternoon, came back Friday night. And the way I go, so it's from where I live in Fond du Lac, Kitty Corner, to Madison, Dubuque, Iowa City, and then Des Moines, and it was sheer perfection. I thought, oh my goodness, this has the potential to be just an amazing crop. So even though our crop in Wisconsin was planted a little bit late, we are looking real good right now. And the Iowa crop, it was actually really neat to see on my way to Des Moines. It was just lush, lush, lush green fields. And then as I drove back, the tasseling had just started. So the lush green had just that soft hint of the yellow on top with the tasseling occurring. I had never seen just that transformation within 24 to 48 hours. It was magnificent. But anyway, yeah, so that crop looks great. But I do know that some of the western states are struggling and the drought is real. And it makes me wonder if it's just that kind of battle we've had the last few years where does the central and eastern part of the country have great crops and does it make up for any drought that the western part might see? so it's a real tug of war, because if the United States, if we have a good corn yield of 183 or higher, well, it kind of takes some of the zap out of the lower trending global ending stocks, because the Americans come in and save the day. But if we come out and we end up having a yield less than 180 on corn, this market would still have then every reason to rally higher from here.
Do $12, different subject, but in the same area, do $12 new crop corn futures worry you as it's related to the size of the plantings that the South Americans might do?
Yeah, so with this bean market rally that we've had, it seems like, you know, we've maybe priced ourselves out of the market short term, in a sense, from competition from South America. We are a little bit higher priced than what they are now. And does it then give them more incentive to just keep planting as many soybeans as possible? And there was talk yesterday, one of their private forecasters had come out and said that they thought it was going to be, again, just the potential for another record crop. So, you know, it has been nice that China has been buying from us, definitely politically motivated. But as soon as South America has bigger crops to come, they'll buy from there. I get worried that Argentina might do their tax sale, and then that gives their farmers incentive to just go ahead and open the floodgates and sell all of their crop. You know, it's still kind of that touch-and-go window where we trade every single weather forecast. The market's overbought. I'm a little bit cautious here that we might see a slight pullback for prices. So in summary here, I think this is a great opportunity if you have old crop corn in the bin to be moving it, just because unless it's a legit flash drought from here on out, you know, there still is a lot of old crop corn that has to come to town.
How should producers and yourself consider the issues still related to the Black Sea and to the Middle East and logistical problems that has created, particularly for wheat and corn?
So with the geopolitical struggles that are out there, that's been part of the reason why the markets have been working higher. And it is something that I think could keep market prices supported. The one thing that if they have continued struggles over there, it might allow for better exports from the United States to other countries. We might see an uptick in corn exports, but the USDA just accounted for that on the most recent WASDE. They increased export demand for corn. And same would be true for wheat. Maybe we see other countries want to be buying some of our wheat if they can't get it out of the Black Sea region. But I have a hunch, you know, Russia has said that in spite of all of the struggles between Ukraine and Russia with some of their waterway issues, Russia is looking for different ways to get the wheat to export. So it's not that there's a lack of product to be exported in the Black Sea. It's just the short-term transportation hiccup to get it out of the countries.
Thanks much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. 59% of the corn crop is silking across the nation. That's 5 percentage points ahead of average. Corn in the dough stage sits at 13%. 11% is the historical five-year average. National corn condition is rated 67% good to excellent. Here are some of the developments in the key states. South Dakota corn silking is 19 percentage points ahead of its five-year average, coming in at 49%. Iowa corn silking at 72%, 15 points ahead of the typical pace. Minnesota at 58%. That's 14 points ahead of the five-year average. Kansas corn in the dough stage is at 36%, running 12 points hotter than normal. And conversely, Nebraska is lagging just a bit in the dough stage, sitting at just 6% against a 12% five-year average. Moving to soybeans, the national crop is 66% blooming, 6 points ahead of average. Soybean setting pods reach 32%, 8 points ahead of the typical 24% pace. And the national soybean crop is 66% good to excellent. Here are some of the interesting regional numbers. We'll start with South Dakota again. They're 62% blooming for their soybeans. That's 19 percentage points ahead of the five-year average. 76% of the soybeans in Minnesota are blooming. That's 12 percentage points above the five-year average. 40% are setting pods, a full 17 points ahead of the historical norm. Illinois soybean setting pods sits at 37%. They're 12 points ahead of their usual pace. North Dakota bean setting pods have advanced, tracking 9 points ahead of the five-year average at 20%. And Kansas bean setting pods are also accelerating, coming in 8 points ahead of the five-year average at 22%. Finally, looking at winter wheat, the U.S. winter wheat harvest is 74% complete, just ahead of the 71% five-year pace. South Dakota, again, experiencing a remarkably early winter wheat harvest. Not a good one, but still remarkably ahead, sitting at 61% complete compared to its typical 32% pace. Now let's check in on the Crop Protection Network. This is operated by the Land Grant University plant pathologist and is an early warning system of sorts for diseases in crops like corn and soybeans. For tar spot, it still shows that central Indiana is one of the hot spots around the nation, right through Vermilion County in Illinois. That's near Danville. Otherwise, there are some new reports this week in Illinois. They're in LaSalle and Kendall and Grundy counties, along with Knox County. 16 counties in Iowa are reporting some tar spot. Most of those are along Interstate 80. And then, of course, we've talked about Nebraska, where the bulk of the eastern half of the state has some reported tar spot. Those were earlier in the year, along the Kansas border as well. And that's a quick look at corn diseases. For soybean diseases, they're nearly non-existent in the database that's operated by the Crop Protection Network. You can find more at cropprotectionnetwork.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Check us out online at WILLAG.org. A couple of interesting things that are taking place this week. On Wednesday, tomorrow, you may join the crop scientist for the Monmouth Field Day. Check out all the details in our calendar of events online at willag.org. That kicks off at 8:30 a.m. tomorrow morning. And then Thursday evening is the Dixon Springs Ag Center's Beef Field Day. If you've not been to that one, it's a really good event, and I hope you will catch up with them as well. You can find all the details again at willag.org in the calendar of events. Each Tuesday, we take a look at the agricultural energies. Today, we're joined by Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing. Hello, Dave. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, Todd, good to be with you here, and certainly been a pretty active oil and energy market here of late.
Tell me about this last few weeks as the Iran war has heated back up. What kinds of things have you been worried about?
Yeah, Todd, it's now a war that's really developing on a number of fronts. And not only do we have, you know, the U.S.-Iran directly in the Strait of Hormuz, we now have Yemen and Houthi rebels threatening shipping through the Red Sea on the west side of Saudi Arabia and out through the ports that get to this to the Aden Sea. And of course, we've got things going on with Russia and Ukraine. I think the best way to maybe frame that up, Todd, is maybe I'll just pick diesel fuel. If you look at the pricing, like, you know, back in mid-March when we got to the peak in terms of, you know, diesel fuel futures anyway, we hit $4.83. We got all the way down to $3.05 there in mid-June after the peace accord, the ceasefire, I should say, was supposedly put in place on June 17th. And of course, as that's fallen apart, we're now back up with heating oil futures into that, you know, 420, 430 type of a range. So we're, you know, markets are certainly backing, you know, back and forth and putting a lot of volatility in front of you as a consumer or an end user of diesel fuel or of any kind of energy product, whether you're filling your gasoline tank at the convenience store or whether you're on the farm. So it's challenging times for sure.
We talked about this earlier in the year when there was the possibility of peace and what producers might or maybe should do about their fall needs, whether that be for diesel fuel or natural gas, either one. Has, have you been having discussions with producers about what that looks like today?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly been a renewed question that we've gotten this week and last as things have toggled back up. And if you remember back the last time you and I spoke, we were talking about keeping some working inventory in front of you and keeping some fuel in your tanks or fuel under contract, maybe not covering all of your gallons to get you through fall or the end of the year, but certainly having a chunk of those done. And that was because of the upside risk and the ability to, you know, have a lasting peace deal, particularly in the Strait of Hormuz, is going to, I think, prove difficult. We know that it's proved difficult in the Black Sea region between Russia and Ukraine. And at this point, things seem to be getting, I guess I'll say, worse, not better, Todd. So, like it or not, I think we still have to bite the bullet and be a buyer on dips here. I just think they're, you know, the open-endedness and the uncertainty of what may happen down the road here is a tough deal. And, you know, good example, Goldman Sachs was out to their clients this morning talking about the ability for crude oil to get to 120 here in the Brent market by the fourth quarter if the Strait remains, you know, challenged or you know, in jeopardy. And right now, you know, that crude, that's a $30 rally in Brent crude from where we're at right now. And certainly that's a, you know, that's another 20 or 30 or 40 cents in diesel fuel.
On a related energy issue, what worries should producers have today about their fall fertilizer needs?
Yeah, Todd, unfortunately, you know, it's going from bad to worse, I think, in that binocular. And I mean, I think you throw Russia in there as well. And Russia today is closing a few of their ports, you know, due to security issues and basically inability to protect ships going in and out of certain spots. So, you know, how long this can sustain, we're not sure. But, you know, in March, it sounded like a long time till fall. We're now here sitting here in July. It's not that long till fall. And so, you know, I think you need to be worried, and I think you need to be, or not worried, I'll say concerned, or be watching what happens here. And the fertilizer situation, we do seem to have some working inventory in front of us in terms of the dealer network or the supply network here in the U.S. I think South America is probably in a little bit more jeopardy here between now and the end of the year as they get ready to plant a crop here in the fall, but it's going to be a problem they're going to have to live with for a while, Todd. And as you said, these problems, when you talk about 25% of global oil supply or, you know, global oil trade, and we're looking at a similar, you know, type of a number on the fertilizer side for at least these certain products. So, you know, probably the chance that this could get worse before it gets better, I guess, would be the way to view it.
To this point in time, the Trump administration and the market has been using the United States as the backstop, meaning the Trump administration has opened the SPR up, our oil reserves. They've emptied them out. They were lower going in anyway. How much of a concern is that for you?
Well, I think you have to be concerned. So there's maybe three things I would highlight. One, I think if we see the Red Sea, you know, closed due to this, the Houthi rebel situation, you're talking about not only Saudi exports, but others. You're talking 6 to 7 million barrels a day that could potentially be locked in. And that's in addition to maybe, I don't know, 500,000 barrels a day of straight up distillate exports or diesel fuel exports. You throw that on top of what's happening here with the SPR in the U.S., and we're at a 43-year low on the SPR, 1983, Todd. I don't know about you, but in 1983, I didn't even have a driver's license at that point. So we're talking about going back several decades here and looking at what happens. And there's just not a lot of good solutions that we can do. I mean, our crude oil, you know, production here in the U.S. continues to be at a record high. Our refineries are running as hard as they can, but we're also exporting a lot of product. And so, you know, not only in the U.S. have the reserves been drawn down, but the IEA is having to coordinate draw across the globe to others who hold strategic reserves. And we're in a situation where hurricane season is just getting started here. We have the first kind of tropical storm in the Gulf here this week. And, you know, as things heat up into the fall, the you know, like I said, defining what that top end can be for oil gets very dangerous, I think, in terms of where we're at. So kind of a very tiptoe type of a period here, I think, in the next several months for the oil markets.
1983 was the very first year that I went on the radio for a paid gig. I was a 19-year-old doing the Illinois State Fair Radio Network for 11 days from Springfield. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate that you have reminded me of my age and that you are...
I was baling hay in McDonough County for $5 a day, it seems like.
I had a better job than you did in that case, maybe. I don't know. Hey, thank you much. And we'll talk with you again soon enough, particularly for Commodity Week on Thursday of this week.
Yeah, thanks, Don.
That, of course, is Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming now joins us to take a look at the forecast. Don, I hear you're traveling today. Where are you?
I am in Tucson, Arizona at the U.S. Dry Bean Convention. And, of course, everybody wants to know about the weather, so that's why I'm here.
Of course they do. And Dry Bean Convention, kind of odd, I would think, that you're in Arizona at this point, because really what I want to hear about is those areas of North Dakota. That's kind of where I wanted to start. That is a dry bean growing region, particularly to the western half of that state. Are farmers worried at this point?
Yeah, they are. You know, it's interesting. You leave North Dakota and you come to Tucson where it's raining and actually cooler. So they headed south and cool off and see what it looks like to have rain. Yeah, the pattern that we've been in, this big high and this very warm weather that has dominated the northern plains and parts of the central United States here over the last 10 days or so. That high pressure ridge is shifting south and westward. And so what that is doing is it's taking any available subtropical moisture coming up out of the desert southwest, curving into the central part of the country to miss and stay to the west and east of those areas. So the upper Midwest and the northern plains are going to continue to be very warm. And while there will occasionally be some thunderstorm activity coming in, it's not going to be enough to take the edge off the heat and dryness.
So do you think that this heat will be enough to cause an issue related to pollination, the dryness, and how far into the greater part of the Corn Belt might it slip?
Well, I think as we get into the northern and western Corn Belt in particular, as we leave July and head into August, I think that's the center of the heat. If we were to kind of draw a bullseye in terms of where the warmest anomaly is going to be, it's going to be in those eastern areas of the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, eastern areas of Nebraska, and then that will extend southward into Kansas, Oklahoma, and parts of northern and central Texas, while the other ends of the country, the far west and the far east, the anomaly may be the opposite. It actually may be a little cooler and wetter than average, but we're definitely setting up shop where I think the northern and northwest Corn Belt will be most susceptible to the hottest, driest.
Anything else that we ought to take up today, or does that cover most of it?
I think that covers most of it. I think in the weeks ahead, you know, we are heading into some critical weeks, and it's not unusual at all this time of year to see a big high in the middle part of the country. It all depends, though, on where it wants to be and how it shifts around and regulates the heat and the moisture across the U.S.
Thank you much, Don, and enjoy yourself in Tucson.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He is with Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.